Blog Talk Radio.
The thing is that just because we're magic doesn't mean we're not real. We are going to have equal rights and justice in our own country, or we will restructure their functions and ours. A system built to divide and impoverish and destroy us cannot stand if we do.
Black, you can't let it go to the judges.
Yep, what Chris Rock said. If you're black, you cannot let it go to the judges. Just bring in a commission. That's not bringing the judge. How are you, Kathleen?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. You know, there is a ton of stuff going on in the world. And...
oh, my God.
You know, as I thought about today's show, I kept thinking, I am, like, drawing a blank because there's so much stuff going on. So I figured that we'd start off with, I guess I would start off with the Cheryl Underwood. Should I start off with that? Because you didn't get a chance to talk about that.
I did not.
Yeah.
I did not get a chance to talk about that.
Yeah,
I did not.
You know,
I didn't get a chance to talk about that. Uh-oh, I turned down the wrong block. Anyway, go ahead. Police have a whole bunch of people up against the wall. Searching a car. I know, searching a car. Let me in. This is a really dark back side street. So anyway, New York skyscrapers and everything.
Give you what?
I said, New York, skyscrapers and everything.
I know, that's right. I was going to say, you know, that would lead us into too many different topics, but I'm going to let you get off out of that area before we start talking about that stuff. And I know last week, you know, we talked about the politics stuff, I mean, just a little bit, and what Keith Olbermann said, and you wanted to really comment on that. And I know Low-Key missed out on that, so we're going to give him a couple of minutes before Low-Key joins in. But before we really go into any topics, did you see any of the debate of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton?
I saw the entire debate. I did. I watched the entire thing with some caveat. So as I watched the debate, every time that guy would begin to talk, somehow I just could not sit still. So I was mopping and cleaning and washing dishes and, I was listening, but I was so agitated whenever he would begin to speak that I just could not sit still. So, you
couldn't
know.
Focus? Yeah.
I couldn't. I don't know. I was watching it with Sean, and he was able to sit still and listen to the whole thing. And I just like, I don't know. I just can't. I had to get up. I was mopping the floor. He's like, would you sit down? It was really difficult.
Would you just sit down?
I watched the debate. I did. How about you?
Man.
Did you watch it? I know. I'm gonna
take a zero on that. You know, I never watch debates.
I know.
You know,
but
you know, just in defense for the live audience, I'll say this: the reason I don't watch debates is because debates aren't really important when you're paying attention to this stuff all the way through, right? So I can pretty much tell you both of their platforms and all of that stuff. So just to get a line on what the climate is, you cannot watch a debate. It's like working a campaign. So if you're a political science major and you want to know how to officially run a campaign from inside of campaigns, you can't watch the performance because it is just smoke and mirrors. It is just a performance. So, you know, but I do have to say this about it, just kind of as an impression of the debate. It amazes me that, you know, since Donald Trump, I mean, he did horrible, but he is not good. He's erratic. He's crazy. You don't have a good attention span. You can't debate nobody when your attention span is bad. So it's not going to get any better for the next debate. None of that. It just is not good. So no matter how many Fox News people you put on there, Roger Ailes or whomever to coach him, it is not going to work. You can have the best coaches no matter what sport you're playing, but if you can't actually perform or play that sport, it won't help you. So as I watch this, it amazes me that I watch, you know, most of the networks talk about this and say, try to spin it by saying, well, President Obama had Mitt Romney beat President Obama on the first speech, and that's not a good comparison. And the reason it's not a good comparison is because, first of all, he was already president. Secondly, we already know that that man can give a good speech. And what people seem to forget is that on the day of the first debate was his anniversary. So he spent all day with his wife. He was still traveling, and he made a campaign stop. That's why he looked tired. It was not that Romney was good or that he overwhelmed the president. The president was tired. So I don't like revisionist history. So when people look back on speeches, they say things like, well, you know, Mitt Romney, you know, beat the president in the first speech. That was just an illusion and an impression, because we all know that that guy, the president, I was going to say that man, we already know the president is a better communicator than 95% of the people generally. Like, there is no politician that's better than him. So if you thought you were going to beat him on round two, it wasn't going to happen. Now, Donald Trump cannot run two sentences together. He's a mean-spirited person, so he's a bully. So he'll throw digs at you all day and look crazy and throw out sighs and make faces. But debating is about making an articulate statement and trying to just pretty much put a package around a thought. And that, my friend, is something that you have to be able to do prior to being debriefed on doing a debate. So when I saw it, and I just want to say hey to everyone online, by the way. Brother Sean from Syracuse, the guy here, calls me and asked me about it. And as we talked about, or he watched the debate as well, while I didn't watch it. But the thing is, that impression for people who are not political and watch that stuff, I think across the board, outside of the professional people, the professional people said it was bad. The people who are not professional said it was worse, right? And
did we lose Jerome? Or did we lose me? What happened? Let's see here. Let's see.
Two sentences together. Like, how did you actually repair that kind of damage? So Donald Trump, on his first debate, showed that he couldn't debate. Not that he's not a good debater. It just shows that he's not competent to even be there. So there is no way that we're going to be able to redo there's no way that Donald Trump's going to be able to redo his campaign to actually clean up the fact that he can't run two sentences together. But more importantly, they're trying to send out the signal that he may not debate her. He may not go through the next two debates because he made up that Lester Holt and those guys were against him. Sounds like a six-year-old.
That's so funny that you say that, because that's what Sean kept saying. He's like, I wonder if it's that she just can't say that he acts like a toddler. You know, because he's like, if you listen, to him, and he's like, no, no, wrong, wrong. You know, he's just like,
right.
He's
but
like
that
a
worked.
Tot, like,
well, that right. that worked in there on the Republican side. That worked because. Those guys, it was too many of them. They're really mean-spirited, and they weren't interested in what anybody had to say, so they liked the rudeness.
They liked the what?
They liked them being rude, the rudeness of his actions
right.
during the Republican
right.
primary.
Right. So after the debate was over, then he began to say things like, you know, there was something wrong with my mic, and I think it was done on purpose. And then, you know, at first he said, well, Lester was great. Then, you know, after he heard that everybody said he bombed, it's like, okay, well, it was the moderator. It was Lester. You know, he asked me the hard questions. He didn't ask her any. And so it's just like, okay, well, let me just keep throwing stuff to see whichever one sticks. And so, you know, the majority of us who are watching have no brain at all. And it really doesn't matter to him. What we think is so long as he continues to get the attention of the media, and they all he needs is for them to spin his story for him, and they do it. Even the media
right.
that disagrees with him spins his story for him. And, you know, so and then they say things like, "Oh yeah, well, you know, he's saying this." And he's complaining about, you know, Hillary said that. And all these other things. And he may not do the next debate and all this other kind of stuff. So then everybody's watching to see whether or not he's going to do the next debate. And then the whole conversation is about Trump again. So now we're talking about
right.
whether or not he's going to do the debate. Now we got to get his campaign manager or whatever her name is, Kelly or whatever her name is, now we got to get her back on to talk about whether or not he'll do the debate. But, of course, when you have her on, that's not what she talks about. She talks about exactly what her agenda and his agenda is, which is what he does. And it just, to me, I don't understand why they continue to allow this man to manipulate the media for his own gain. It just baffles me.
Hey, that was the name of the game, boy. He used that. Like it was nobody's business doing the Republican primaries, and he's expecting them to do it now. But the funny thing is, a friend of mine who I'm going to loosely say that term, who's a Republican, I spoke to him this week, and he said it didn't seem like, you know, when people thought that NBC was favoring him, it seems like that's not true now. And I said, I don't know what you were watching. NBC still favors that fool. But that's enough of my opinion. I'm going to bring in Loki. What up, brother, Loki? See, I was going to run out about that.
What's going on? Hey, Kamesh, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
You know, we're talking
so
about
the
debate.
About
I don't know
debate,
if you saw it.
Huh?
Yeah, did you see
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you know, I saw it. And you know, you if you were a comedian, you could sit there and write some good stuff.
Oh, gosh. There's going to be a lot of good stuff. He said his mic was too low, but when he started sniffing, they turned the mic up. That's what his excuse is. Okay, that was good timing. So I can see about the sniff. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, I think, so let me ask the question, because everybody's, you know, up in arms. And so do you think Lester lost control?
I thought he totally lost control. He never had control.
I agree.
He didn't have control of the guy. You know, and he didn't even make the attempt to control him. You know, he would just politely ask him, you know, hey, yeah, Mr. Trump, your 2 minutes are up. Well, no, wait. And then he let him go on for about 6 minutes straight. I was timing it. I said, okay, so at what point are they going to just turn off the daggone mic? You know, you said,
right.
Listen, you can respond quickly. And then he goes on for another 3 minutes. And, okay, and then he asks him another question. And I'm like, are you serious right now? You're going to ask him another question? Oh, my God. Dude,
right.
I was so
right.
mad. I couldn't even sit still.
You know, although
you know,
he Go ahead.
Go ahead. You what?
No, I said you're fine. Go ahead.
But I think, listen, you know, I questioned the whole thing. How did they pick Lester? Where did that come from? What's his experience with debates? Because the truth of the matter is you needed a veteran hosting that debate with those two people. You know, there were times where he didn't, because if you look back, when the crowd cheered for something Donald said, he said, I'm going to admonish you.
Yeah.
Well, he said, I'm going to admonish you. We agreed to keep it quiet, so let's keep it quiet. But when they did it for Hillary, he never said anything to the crowd. And this is why they felt like he was being biased.
Because he didn't get
Hillary's trying to win. Right. And, I mean, you know, I just think, listen, they really could have done a better job. And I like Lester. And I ain't going to put it all on him, so I'll put it on the network, that there should have been a senior person who's done many debates, who's controlled some of the, you know, toughest politicians. That's who should have been asking those questions. That's who should have hosted that debate.
Now,
they needed somebody with a button to mute their mics when they start interrupting each other and all that kind of foolishness. They needed to they need to put a halt to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but here's the thing. So I don't think that it was again, I didn't watch the debate in its entirety. So the thing about debates is, you know, there's an understanding. So they make rules and all of that stuff is negotiated by the campaign. So when we go in there, I get 3 minutes, you get 2 minutes, you get the rebut, blah, blah, blah. They set those rules. So they do that with the moderator in mind. When they start breaking the rules, it's how much do you want yelling in there? And I think what happened on the Republican side during their debate, that's all they did was yell. And they yelled so much that they were like, you know, Donald Trump is calling Rubio little Marco, and they, like, he's saying names into his mic. So he's, you know what I mean? Like, he's used to being rude. He's used to being a bully. So what happened, what Lester Holt not saying anything to him, they let him run off for as much as he needed to show that he was erratic. So now they can't say he didn't control the crowd. He didn't control the situation, because from what I understand, Clinton stopped talking too at some point. They just let him ramble. And it's a good thing that people saw him ramble too, because the problem is that we keep covering for him by giving him really short segments and sound bites to talk in. And when he had a moment, like that 90 minutes, I knew after 30 minutes you cannot hide once you get tired behind any kind of fake posture that you have. 90 minutes is a long time. Be sitting there talking. I mean, we do it every week, but that's different.
I like the comment about I'll release my taxes when she releases her emails. Like, yo, we're gonna go there. We're gonna go there. And I like the comment she said where she was like, you know, okay, just think about what you're just listening to. You know, they basically talking about him.
Right.
Rambling, you know.
Right. They let him ramble. Think about this, Loki. If I was debating that fool, I'd be like, I yield my time to Donald Trump. Keep it moving. Like, I yield all my time to that fool. Like, right? Because the more he talks, the more you'll go, what the heck is he doing here? So, again, it's the whole saying that we talked about before, that I'm not a doctor, but schedule your appointment with me at about 3:30. I'll be in the office. Like,
right.
You can't say he's not a politician, so I don't expect him to do better. I'm not a doctor.
Well,
so
you know, at what point do you stop saying I'm not a politician? I mean, you know, I mean, at what point? You know, I mean, another thing for me is that the whole climate change thing, when he claims he didn't say it, but he's on record saying it in 2014. You know, I mean, he said it's something the Chinese, you know, it's a hoax.
Something the Chinese invented?
I mean, so this is amazing that this man has said some of the most outrageous things and then has, I mean, you know, the fact that he is on national television debating to be the next president of this country is embarrassing. I mean, and just listening to his comments and his rants and his, I mean, like they said, it's the fact that she had fact checkers listening to everything he said, and she was taking some good notes, by the way. She was taking notes if you paid attention. I'm sitting there watching it.
Wow.
Right. And I'm sitting there, and he made a good point, too. Now, he says, you're talking about President Obama, but you and your husband, your husband said some really bad things about him.
Right.
But here's the thing. Listen, man, I give him credit on that one. He gets a point on that one.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt, because that's fair game. That's fair game.
Right.
So if you want to talk about that during the political round, when she was running, she said some nasty things about him. So she needs to own it. And she needs to say, now that I know him, I don't feel that way no more. However, she needs to clean that up, but she needs to clean it up. I mean, just on the outside, I can tell you I've said this about black people in particular supporting the Clintons. With the president out there, with the first lady out there, and rattling people of color or black folks in particular to vote for Hillary, Hillary's campaign is not respecting black people because I don't think they're integrating Obama folks into her campaign or black folks into her campaign. So what she's enjoying the privilege of is that externally you have this group of people supporting her, but she's not accommodating them in her policies. So it's just all the old Hillary people that's still in their inner circle, and she wants the Obama coalition and people who are supporting them and millennials, but they ain't integrated into her campaign. She's saying, y'all need to do something to support me because I'm going to help your agenda. We don't know that because there ain't nobody there.
Well, I mean, this is the woman that called black super predators, right?
Super predators,
This is a woman who's a super predator that helped support her husband's bill across the country. So he made a good point when he said that too. But my thing is this: are we expecting her to do anything other than what she's doing? I don't expect her to go out and include blacks in anything she's doing, because think about who she is. Let's be honest.
Yeah, you're right. I don't expect her to do that, but I'm saying that we at Obama's side, just at the president's side, I would expect him to negotiate something for her. She really does need people of color generally. So I hate this conversation that, you know, they're catering white females, educated white females are going to make the difference in this election. That is bull, right? Obama lost them, still won. They lost educated white men. They won educated white men, still lost. And Obama won in a landslide twice. So obviously he didn't need educated white women or educated white men either. So that's a falsehood that keeps them in power to give the impression that it's all about them. It ain't about them.
Yeah.
So we need to see that. Sorry, but did I cut Kathleen off? I haven't heard for a second.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought I cut you off, girl. Go ahead. Did you want to jump in there? Because can I ask you a question, by the way? I know at some point you did some legwork for the Obama campaign, right? Have you felt compelled to help the Clinton? Yeah, I know you did a lot of legwork. I was being nice.
Yeah. I was driving all over the country.
I know.
For President Obama, it was so serious. I had just so while he was on the campaign trail, right after he beat Hillary in the primary, they did an appearance here in New York for a women's group here in New York, and I went. And I had just been fired that week from my job. And so he's sitting at the table with his sister, And, you know, I chatted with her a little bit. And then I was, right up front. So when the, you know, speeches and everything were over, he was with Hillary Clinton, as a matter of fact. When the speeches and everything, I told you about this, Jerome. I went and I shook his hand, you know, said hi and stuff. And I gave him a copy of my book. He gave it to Reggie. And, you know, just kind of, I think it was my book I gave him. But anyway, and I told him, you know, that I had just been fired from my job. And what I intended to do was to work before I applied for another job. I was going to take that time to stop for him to make sure that I did everything within my power to get him elected from my end, from my little personal world, whatever it was I could do. And I went to Ohio, I went to Philly, I went to Pennsylvania, I was doing phone banking, I was doing door knocking, I was getting signatures. I did everything I possibly could. I was down at that Democratic club, couldn't tell me nothing. So, what's your question?
No, okay, so my question is, okay, after all of that, did you for one moment thought for Hillary? Just a phone bank, like one thing, like anything. Did you feel compelled that transferred that says, hey, you know what, now she may be good enough for me to put some energy in? Did you ever feel like that?
There's something wrong with my telephone connection. I can't quite hear you. But yes, I did a whole lot of stomping for President Obama. Yes, I really did. But the other question that you're asking me, I'm not tracking. Are you saying something about the hills of Beverly? What'd you say?
I'm talking about that Clinton lady. All right. So, but here's why here's why I said this, is that when Governor McAuliffe, you know, Terry McAuliffe is the governor of Virginia, right? When he ran for governor, the person or the people who are mainly responsible is black female, educated black females voted for him by around 91%. So he did not have a shot to win governor of Virginia, and the only reason he won was because of black females. Now, so who do Hillary need to get in Virginia? Black females. And is she going at them? Pretty much no, because the first lady was in Virginia. Because they know that black females was the demographic that they need to hit. Hillary does not appeal to black women. But instead of her reaching out to black women, they're like, we need to have a black woman out there. And that's why I think it's disingenuous. Like, it's not, you know, ingenuous. They don't really have an outreach, which they should. But that Terry McAuliffe race, just numerically, needs to kind of put the Democratic Party on notice that it is black females that they're actually trying to track when it comes down to getting people on board. And the more that they push the black females away, the worse off that they're going to do in November in some of those states, especially like North Carolina and Virginia, because they were such a big part of the electorate during the last, I guess it was the last governor's race. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just saying. Oh, did I lose Kathleen again?
Well, I did go on to her website, because I was looking for a position, and I went on her website to look for. I was like, okay, look, you know what? She needs some help. She really needs some black folks up in there that can, you know, do something, say something, whatever.
Who knows
so
what they're doing?
I was looking for the position for the outreach to black community, kind of like an Omarosa, but for Hillary Clinton. And she had a couple of positions, one for someone in the Latino community and someone for the black community. But the position for the black community was so convoluted, I couldn't even quite make out what it was she was looking to do. You know, it just, I don't know if it was kind of like an online thing, you know, I don't know, it just didn't really speak to me at all, so I didn't even bother you know, I didn't even bother. But I don't really feel as though there is any kind, and there never was when she was running the last time. I don't really feel as though there's any real serious or concerted effort to reach out to black women or black people at all. She says the right thing in her speeches, but I have not seen, you know, it's very interesting that they say that for the other guy, whose name I just won't say anymore, I just have such a trouble saying it. So the other guy, they always say that he's making these pitches to black audiences, to black people and white audiences. And I don't really see that much difference. I know Mrs. Clinton or Secretary Clinton, she went to the Congressional Black Caucus, and I know she's been to a few black churches here and there and around. But she's not doing that much more, you know, really, genuinely doing that much more to really get, you know, ingrained, embedded in the black community. I haven't seen her on a whole lot of black TV programs, you know, or, you know, there wasn't a whole lot that I'm really seeing. I don't know. I could be wrong, but that's kind of what I'm feeling. And, you know, we'd like to think that this is not a protest vote. I think she's sounding a whole lot better than she did when she first started. But, again, like you said,
I have to say, you know, I do think that this, her performance in debate, she looked better than I've ever seen her look, though. Like her stature and stuff. I really can't, you know, really just take her for any long period of time. But at least, I don't know if it was because he was such a nut or not, but she, I can't tell. But I am telling you, that's the only time she had actually good stature to me. She just never looked like she belonged even in the room. And that has to be the first time I've ever seen that.
So let me throw this out there. We're saying, in reference to what she has done in reaching out to the black community, how do you think she's done in reference or in comparison to her husband when he ran?
I don't think he did any better.
Well, he reached out to Arsenio and got a horn.
Right. I think there are some people who are good at that, right? So when he ran, you got to remember we had just, I mean, what we're talking in '90s, so we came out of Reagan. We didn't give a rat's who was running. Like, he was just charismatic enough that he hung out with black people enough, but I don't think we really cared. We've been ignored for quite a while up to that. You're talking Reagan and Bush. Like, we've been ignored for who knows how long. What was that, like 12 years? We were done. So
and
by the time he came along,
black people
I think
made
people
him
just,
the savior president, though.
But,
yeah,
but that's,
I mean,
why, though.
They made him an honorary black president. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they should have revoked that the day he got in office. What'd you say?
Well, if they were paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sick that they act like that now. I'm not going to call any names because I got respect for our Congressional Black Caucus, but there are some people I can name now who are sickening about the Clintons. Oh, I'll name one. Charlie Rango is sickening.
Yeah.
You know, his love for them is crazy to me. And I'm not saying that
they gave him money and they moved to Harlem. Come on. You know, it's
right.
A lot of self-serving. You know, they were very supportive of him. Look at Charlie Rangel was in office for about 116 years, and they worked with him. He helped them.
But
remember Bill Clinton set up his office in Harlem under Rangel?
Yep.
Rangel sold out Harlem to all the gentrification and all that stuff that started right on the heels of Bill Clinton. And Rangel was the one that was in charge. Black people couldn't buy. Remember all those businesses, the street vendors and everything?
Yep.
They
yep.
lost their businesses like 90 going north. Bam, bam, bam. Everybody that had those storefronts and all those black businesses that were in Harlem all went to pot. under Rangel,
yeah,
right at the time that Bill Clinton was started moving his foundation. But before that, though, but right at the time that Clinton decided he was going to move his foundation to 125th Street or whatever that was. So please,
right.
With regards to Rangel, Clinton was the Clintons and Rangel, they were hooking him up just like all the other black political leaders in the city of New York. If you remember, none of them, Meeks,
I remember.
What's his name, the one that's in jail right now, Malcolm Smith, all the other all the other leaders, even Reverend Flake, all of them, they all were behind Hillary. And the only time they, President Obama, they asked her, will you please release us so that we can support him? Because
it wasn't that sick.
And we are beginning to lose our constituents because we're backing you.
Wasn't that sick?
Right.
That my friend, was sick. Because I remember that. And I remember they had a conference call, and they asked her to release them so that they can support President Obama as delegates. Because they were getting too much
right.
heat inside of in their own districts, and they didn't want to run in the primary. Because can you imagine, and I don't want to reiterate this, but can you imagine you supporting Hillary Clinton against Obama, and your constituency is primarily black, and you are still
right.
hanging on to her skirt? That looks, and I know how that sounds, and I don't care. But they still were thinking on doing it. I know how it sounds. All right. So let's take about 4 minutes. I want you to hear this, Low-Key. I played this, but I want Kathleen. This is Keith Olbermann on Trump. I don't know if you got a chance to see this, Low-Key, but it's on YouTube. He did this 172 things about Trump. So we're going to play about 4 minutes. That's it. It's going to fade out. But I want you to hear this, and we want to comment on this, because I know Kathleen wanted to yell at this. And later on, we're going to talk about what is that woman's name from the talk? Kathleen, you remember her name?
Cheryl Underwood.
Cheryl Underwood. Okay, and later we have a clip for Cheryl Underwood. But I want to do Keith Olbermann first. Check this out, Loki. Let me know what you think. Well, and Kathleen, I know where this is going to go, because it's going to get bad when we finally get this done. So here we go. Let's see if I can pull it up on the board, because you know how we have a little trouble sometimes on the board. This whoops, hold on. It's going to take a second. I don't know if it started. But is this Keith Olbermann? He has his own syndicated – well, it's like a syndicated show, and he's doing – a television show for GQ Magazine. I guess it's what it – I didn't know it had TV network. But Keith Olbermann, I know I've said this before. I wish he was on air. They really do need, like, a liberal democratic television network in this place. Or not even liberal. They need somebody with some sense, because all the rest of them, you know, obviously kind of – in cahoots to some degree. But Keith Olbermann
right.
went through a litany of things about that we obviously act like we can't remember about Donald Trump. And it's amazing to me. So I did pull up on the board. Kathleen, you remember this, right? Let's see. I didn't want to leave her out. Kathleen?
What the one from Keith Olbermann, you said?
Yeah, the one from Keith Olbermann.
Yeah. So okay. You played it last week.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I just wanted to, I wasn't sure if you were familiar with what I'm talking about. So, okay. Let's see if we can get it going.
Every few generations, we Americans are called upon to defend our country, to defend it not so much from foreign dictators or war or terrorism, but from those here who have no commitment to progress or democracy or representative government, no commitment to anything except their own out-of-control minds and the bottomless pits of their egos. Our society has thrown up these people before. Joseph McCarthy, George Wallace, Father Coughlin, Jefferson Davis, Aaron Burr, the Know-Nothings, the Blacklisters, the America Firsters, and we have always thrown them out. and now our generation has its own. The most dangerous individual ever nominated by a major party for the highest office in this country. His base wants few details and fewer facts. They just want to burn it down and blame their failures on the collective other. And Donald John Trump is their demonic messiah in Oompa Loompa's clothing. We must stop him. It is not pleasant. It is not fair that we have to do this, but it is our turn. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who attacked the Pope, who attacked John McCain for being captured by the North Vietnamese, who attacked Gold Star parents, Khazir and Ghazala Khan, and then juxtaposed their names with the phrase radical Islamic terrorism, who attacked Hillary Clinton as a, quote, bigot, who attacked her as brainwashed, as unhinged, as a monster, as the devil, as the most corrupt candidate ever, showing her face on piles of $100 bills and the Star of David, who attacked her as someone who Second Amendment people should do something about, as someone whose religion we don't know anything about, after he had explained he had never asked God for forgiveness, who attacked President Obama and implied he was a traitor, who attacked him as having been complicit in the Orlando terrorist attack, who attacked him for having lower approval ratings than Vladimir Putin, as if Putin's approval ratings could somehow be trusted, who attacked him as being born in another country, who attacked him as the founder of ISIS, then said that was sarcasm, then said it wasn't sarcasm, then attacked him again as the founder of ISIS, who attacked the women who accused Roger Ailes of harassment, who attacked Mexicans as rapists, bringing drugs and crime, who attacked African Americans and claimed they were all living in poverty with no jobs and schools that were no good, who attacked Harrisburg, Pennsylvania as a war zone, and attacked the United States of America and claimed it is in a, quote, death spiral. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who lied about opposing the war in Iraq when there is a tape of him supporting it, a tape recorded on the first anniversary of 9/11, who lied about his business in Russia, who lied about meeting Russian President Putin, who lied about offering child care to his employees when it was child care for his hotel guests. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who congratulated himself in two tweets and a press release for predicting terrorist attacks like Orlando while bodies still lay in the Pulse nightclub, who congratulated himself after the killing of Dwayne Wade's cousin. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president an irresponsible, unrealistic, naive, petulant, childish, vindictive, prejudiced, bigoted, racist, Islamophobic, anti-Semitic, misogynistic, fascistic, authoritarian, insensitive, erratic, disturbed, irrational, inhuman individual named Donald John Trump. This is madness. Any questions?
Amazing.
I don't know why that went. Yeah. Are you with me? Did I lose you?
I love Keith Olbermann.
I would second that. I just, you know, there are a few people who are speaking to the fact. You know, as you would hope that more people would come out and speak like Keith is, they tend to keep cowarding. I mean, and the latest one for me is Ted Cruz.
Oh, gosh.
What's that?
You said people keep cowarding, and I was like, Ted Cruz, these people?
People who would be speaking up. I said, they're cowarding. And I said, the latest one who, you know, had so much to say and said he would never, never support him, has come out in support of him. And that's an embarrassment for him, for anybody who follows him.
It's pretty much called, you know, I want to be able to get a job again as a Republican. For the majority,
and true, because after the last debate with him, and he said he would never support him, and Washington and all the Republicans closed ranks on Cruz and basically said, we will oust you. You'll never get a job. You'll never do anything. And here he is. After he went to D.C. to meet with others, and he met with Ryan, you know, they pretty much said, this is what you need to do, and we will
will take care of you.
Right.
You know?
Sold to the highest bidder.
Right. Right. So, yeah, so what Keith is saying, I mean, it's an amazing thing. But you know what's interesting? How much is being said about it? Very little, right? How much is being said about it? How many people are, you know what I'm saying? How many major networks or major people in the public's eye are talking? He'll get a million. He'll get a couple of million views, but you will not see that broadcast. And that's
right.
Another sad fact of the media.
They didn't even want to broadcast him when they were broadcasting him.
Right. Right.
<Okay. laughs> So now,
like, we don't know what he's
going to say.
We don't know what he's going to say because he's capable of anything.
I think we lost Jerome again.
Did we say a key word?
Jerome will be back in a second.
I said we must have said a key word. He ran off again.
Yeah, you got it right. I know. Every week we say a key word and he's out of there. So he put on Keith Olbermann.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Right, let's just have at it.
We have to talk about that with Rome because once a week, every week he manages to fade out. Key word.
He does.
What did you think about the whole discussion on stop and frisk?
You know, when he said bring back stop and frisk, and Lester was saying, you know, it was found to be unconstitutional, and he says, well, actually it was not, you know, the judge this, the judge that, and then it was under Bloomberg, and then it came back, and then the mayor, our current mayor of New York, stopped it. I did the fact check, or I looked at the fact check on that, and they were saying that he was actually right. To some extent, I think there might have been a few things off there. But the issue of stop and frisk, Hillary Clinton responded perfectly to that. It was found to be used. We don't have to talk about this, but it was unconstitutional because in its implementation.
Right.
In the implementation of stop and frisk, it was unconstitutionally used, and there was tremendous bias against Black and Latino men, but much more so against Black men. Black people,
right.
But Black men. And that was what they found. It was what the research did bear that out. People did bear that out. Judges, everybody, there was no arguing that this is how that stop and frisk was being used, which is why there was such an uproar about it. And mayor, so they're trying to say, well, the problem is de Blasio because he was weak and it was not found to be unconstitutional and all that other kind of crap. Like, we all knew it. And if you look at the prisons, the prisons will bear it out. So, you know.
Right.
And what's going on with around the country with the murders of Black young men and Black men, if you give them the free-for-all to go and do the stop and frisk, my thought is that number will even more drastically increase.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I just wanted to say that in my silence, that the board was kind of locked out. And I'm thinking, I can hear you guys fine, just like in Kathleen's case, she couldn't hear me. Or when you can't hear me talking, it's kind of like
that.
I'm yelling. And but anyway, I'm back and everything's good. They didn't lock me out because of Keith Olbermann talking.
Oh, we thought we hit the key word and you disappeared again. I mean.
I actually had two lines open, and I was on mute for the whole time. That's all right.
Just
for the record, I was hearing you all clearly. I was joking about that. What were you asking me?
I got the joke. I don't know why. I don't know why he didn't get the joke. I didn't get it because
it just happened to be. Like, that's why I didn't get the joke. I'm like, hello, you can't hear me.
Well, we figured you were on your weekly walkout.
Oh, no, I wasn't striking. I did take a knee when we started the show with the theme song. I just wanted to say that. Like, at the end of the show, I'm going to take a knee just to show support. Colin Kaepernick? No, I'm joking. So the thing is, with the stop and frisk, though, it is funny that Donald Trump is still yelling, we need to bring back stop and frisk. And you can look at those numbers, and they're posting them all day. So even during the debate, when you watch Giuliani, really shouldn't be talking about nobody marriages when he married his first cousin, and then he divorced the other woman in a press conference. He need to be the last one bringing up women. But for when those guys start saying stuff like stop and frisk was successful and we want to bring that back, I think it's problematic that we just don't address it when they can see those numbers. So a part of the negotiation in that debate was that Lester Holt wouldn't fact check them. And I'm thinking, so let me get this straight, Republicans. You want to lie without anybody saying that you're lying. And I think that just ran aground on them. So that's why with people like Keith Olbermann, and probably why I keep getting kicked out and muted, is the fact that none of us give a rat's about that. We're not going to keep status quo by saying we're going to be objective journalists and somebody else needs to bring that up. If you are in the media and you know that something is true and you're interviewing somebody, you cannot let them off the hook for lying right in front of you. Because you're doing a bad you're doing a bad public service. So that always throws me when I watch those guys do that, because Giuliani's been lying for years on TV.
Years.
Like, he'll just go on TV and, as America's mayor. It's like, fool, do you remember that you were just about to get run out of town just before 9/11? I don't know. Do you remember that, Kathleen?
Right.
You know, the climate for Giuliani.
Trying to run him out of town for his entire mayoral reign. We were
but it was getting bad. Yeah, but it was getting bad just before 9/11. I mean, because that's, again, he moves his mistress in, tells his wife in a press conference that he wants a divorce. Who does that?
It was sickly, really, right?
Wasn't she sick? Didn't she have some medical issues too?
Yes. She was, but then he was cheating on her the whole time and then moved the mistress into the mayor's mansion.
Right.
He moved into the mayor's mansion.
So,
yeah.
Right. So his moral compass is so far off, and we're supposed to listen to him. Yep.
Right. And they're supposed to be moral authority. So between him and – it's interesting. He and Christy is the top surrogates for Donald Trump and Roger Ailes. So he gets his sex assault charges or whatever. He gets fired from Fox, so he's over at Donald Trump's. Christie is under that Bridgegate scandal that they're letting stuff out every day about how he knew about the traffic problems as payback to a mayor for not supporting him during his run, and how he ran the Port Authority side as his own personal cash cow. They're on trial right now, and those are the two dudes who are your top guys? You talking corruption. I don't care what you say about Clinton. You were talking about corruption before you even start. Them dudes might go to jail before Inauguration Day. And Trump might go to jail, like with that Trump University stuff. Like, you can't elect some guy who's under investigation like that? Man, that's fascinating to me. And the problem is that you are watching all these Republicans come out and endorse Clinton, but the media is, like, tired, like Keith Olbermann saying. And I think I mentioned that before. He named all of the major media outlets, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, CNBC, Fox, all of those guys are complicit in creating Donald Trump as a plausible candidate because they masked all this stuff for months. So what are you going to do now? You masked it. So this is interesting watching. What'd you say?
So they're not going to do anything. They're going to sit there and allow it to happen.
Right, but and that's okay. That's okay. He's going to lose badly, but that's okay that they're masking it. But I am – my problem is just kind of from us being in media. My problem is that when I watch the whitening of media, so you watch MSNBC
right.
or CNN, and all you see is these, you know, young white women in there because Hillary's running, that they're actually whitening the perspective of news. And so those ladies are ladies and gentlemen, or they're gay gentlemen. I don't know what that means, that they're getting out the minorities, putting in women and people who are not males, I guess is how they want to phrase
right.
that. You can come out of the closet any way you want to. It's not my problem. But the issue is the perspective does not say that because you're a woman that you can understand how black women feel. Or you're gay so you can understand how black men feel. Like, that's not even equivalent.
Right.
So instead of putting people of color on television or giving somebody who knows that they don't know, somebody just said this today. Who's the coach of San Antonio Spurs? Start with a P, or last name.
Who are you asking about?
The San Antonio Spurs coach, Popovich.
Popovich.
Right. Yes. Yes, Popovich. So he actually said something today that you know, he's this elusive person who really doesn't say too much during press conferences and does not talk much. But what he said today was, "You white America cannot understand the perspective of black people," and left it at that. Now, at least I have respect for him for even noticing. Because it got to be ridiculous to them, too. No, seriously, they have to be looking at this going, okay, you know what? We've been covering
right.
this for too long. This is just ridiculous. So when we start talking about the, by the way, we have a mutual friend in California. You know the guy who was killed in California is in El Cajon, low-key.
Oh, really?
And you know, we have a friend in El Cajon. I'll have
oh,
to
yeah.
give her a call.
I have a few friends in El Cajon.
Yeah. Yes. Right. I forgot you were stationed out there.
I lived in San Diego.
Yeah. And so I forget about the military stationing in the area, but that's the thing. So we
mm-hmm.
watch these killings of black people by police officers, and then
right.
we are not allowed to say anything about it. And so I was going to save that till the top of the hour, so I guess I'll go into it now and start off with with that. I'm laughing because I keep debating on the Sheryl Underwood clip because Kathleen wanted to talk about Sheryl Underwood, and I don't think it's going to be pretty, so I think I better finish up the serious side of this before we start yelling at Sheryl Underwood. I don't mean to set you up, Kamish. I just wanted to put that out there. But watching what happened in North Carolina, watching what happened in Tulsa, and for anybody to say to us, oh, you need more stop and frisk, knowing that we can't even call the police. Like, he called police because his car stopped. He called 911, got killed. The other woman in El Cajon,
right.
she called 911, and they came and killed her brother. So good luck with us calling 911. Like, I don't know what has to be wrong for us to call 911 now. But that is not a good reason
it
to do that.
That'd be really bad.
It's got to be really bad. Because you can't even call them to, hey, you know, somebody's parked on the wrong side of the street. You might get shot for that. Like, you can't call police for nothing now. You're under suspicion for everything. So,
right.
Kathleen, are you still with us? Or did she drop this time?
No, I didn't drop
it. I was just going to talk about you. Dang, I figured I should have muted her like she was a whole. She got dropped. Oh, my God. All right.
Say hi to Sean,
Charlene.
Guys. Sean is here.
Hey,
say
Sean.
Hi.
Hey,
I thought,
Sean, how are you?
I heard... Good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Good. See, I heard you in the background when you said Popovich. That's why I know Kathleen didn't come up with that. I heard Sean in the background.
Thanks a lot. But I do know where to go. When you ask a sports question, I know where to go. Hey.
I said, say that again.
I heard him before you said say it again. I was like, wait, Kathleen's voice changed. I know that's Sean's voice. I was going to say, Sean, you can jump in on this conversation at any time, but, you know, just wanted to, you're always welcome on the program and to make a little noise. We're just kind of tearing up a little bit. But I wanted to, what'd you say?
I said, thanks, guys. I'll pick you up on that.
Okay. Hey, feel free to jump in. And it doesn't have to be sports related. It didn't have to be Popovich related, but I can't remember if you're San Antonio Spurs fan.
Who, me?
Yeah. You're not a Spurs fan, are you?
I'm a Knicks fan all the way.
Well, you know, I figured they might have been secondary. I knew you were a Knicks fan, but I thought maybe San Antonio was – you didn't have hate for San Antonio like the rest of us.
No, I don't have a hate for them. I respect what they're able to do over there. They're, you know, I don't overly love them or anything like that, but when you got an organization that's able to do what they do, that's, you know, just consistently good without needing to have, you know, superstars or play, you know, through one person.
Yeah.
You got to just give them respect.
Well, and plus they're a small market team too. Kind of like Oklahoma City, who just lost Durant, but I'm not gonna go there. But for a small market team, at least they treated their players right and kept them. So they had to ante up some money, but they did keep them. So yeah, Ginobili, Parker, and Duncan been there for eons.
Yeah.
So they at least kept a big three of some sort in there for a long time. So I have to respect them. All right. So I just want to, before we go on, I just want to make sure, before we start Cheryl Underwood, this is about a three-minute clip of Cheryl Underwood, and Kathleen wanted to talk about Cheryl Underwood because Cheryl Underwood is a co-host on The Talk. The other talk show,
right?
And I should have bought the Views on here too, because I really wanted people to hear Paula Faris get chewed out by Sonny Halstein, the attorney. Yeah, well, she was the guy who was killed, his twin sister, in North Carolina, in Tulsa. They were asking questions, and Paula Faris asked, how did she phrase this? She said, how do you feel about the alleged people bringing up the alleged drug use of your brother kind of thing? And Sonny Huston said, well, wait a minute. Don't ask that. And she said, well, just let her answer. And so they went back and forth just a little second, and then Sonny Huston said, the problem is that you only ask black people about past drug use when something happens to black people. So her attorney ended up speaking about it, saying, we wish the media would stop doing that. That is your responsibility to stop asking irrelevant questions. So I'm sure they fought doing commercial, but I'm going to put that on board. So next week on the show, I am going to play that, because it is a great exchange about how all black people need to understand how to answer questions when somebody asks you something that's not even relevant. Don't entertain it with alleged, or how does that make you feel when somebody alleged something? Because once you answer it, it's confirming that you are acknowledging what they're saying, and you don't have to do that. But here's Cheryl Underwood. Sorry to go off about this, but here's Cheryl Underwood's take, and I won't mute myself this time in case my board get locked. I'm going to be on with you.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Cheryl Underwood. Oh, by the way, Aisha Taylor is coming.
What do you think it'll take to stop racial profiling?
Well, I mean, I wish any of us could answer that question, right? This is like a new low to me. It's so disheartening that he didn't have a weapon. He didn't have any drugs. He didn't have any behavior that was alarming. His arms were up. I don't understand. There was like practically seven police officers there or something. Why this officer could have interpreted this as a threat is so beyond me. I mean, I don't know if maybe we too often there's paid leave. I don't know if it needs to be, you know, prosecuting when someone uses such poor judgment like this. I mean, that's the only thing I can
trust. I think there are two things to think about, which is, first of all, as you said, he was complying. He was tasered. You can't tell from these videos, but what it seems like, and this is allegedly, is that he was actually shot when he was already on the ground, which is really alarming.
Oh.
We also remember a recent case, and I don't have the names. I think it was in Florida, of a guy who was a therapist working with a guy with autism.
Yeah.
He's on the ground, on his back with his arms raised, and they shoot him anyway.
Yes.
And when he asked the cop, "Why'd you shoot me?" the cop said, "I don't know."
Right.
So what we have is, look, this is hard to talk about. This is hard stuff to talk about. But we have a legacy of racism in this country. And if we don't start calling it racism, then we can't fight it. We have to see what it is. Cops have to be trained differently. If this had been, you don't have to train the police not to shoot white people. Why you got to train them not to shoot us?
But, Daddy, I'm saying everything has to be confronted. Everything has to be confronted. Because when you see a high speed,
I was at a high speed chase recently in L.A. with a Caucasian woman. She went through several counties. She ran into cars. She ran up on the road. When they took her out of the car, they gently removed what looked like a cell phone and gently handcuffed her. If that had been a black man, he would have been face down on the pavement without 1 second of conversation. We have to change how we see each other. And we cannot do that until we say what it is, which is that racism and fear of black men specifically drives these shootings. We have to change as a nation.
But I know we got to go to break, but first thing you got to do, you got to make it a hate crime. You got to make it, you got to put people
you
in jail. When you shoot somebody under the color of authority, you need to lose your job, and you need to lose your livelihood, and you need to lose your freedom, like every other American loses their freedom.
That's right.
But remember, there are good police officers out there, and the ones that are not, they need to go to jail. And don't tell me this. We got to train. Y'all white. Y'all drive all the time and don't nothing happen to y'all. And we black. And I'm afraid to drive my damn car because if they don't know who I am, I could be shot. Until y'all feel that, this ain't never going to stop. Until you all that are not black feel it and stand with us, this is not going to stop.
We'll be right back.
Okay, and here we go. Kathleen, you're up. That was Cheryl Underwood at the end with her emotional response to what's going on. I don't mean to laugh at that. Kathleen?
Oh, jeez.
We have a lot of empathy for her on this show. Yeah, jeez.
I was trying, like, the second time I heard it, I was trying to just kind of, you know, have more compassion for what she was saying. And I really do go all the way with her when she's, you know, talking about the, you know, you don't have to train police to not shoot white people, you know. I'm there with her on that, following her all the way up until she starts with the, "You white, you don't know what this is like. I'm black and I'm scared to drive a car." And if they don't know who I am, I could get shot.
Yeah, that was pretty selfish.
And when she said that, my face just, you know, my nose, my face, my everything just put, like, what did she just say? If they don't know who I am. As though the I am that she is different from the I am that I, Kathleen, am. So she's somebody different. So I'm not really like them. I'm somebody else. So you're not supposed to shoot me, but because you don't know who I am, you could shoot me too. So what is he saying? What is she really offering? That because she's a television, she's a comedian, she's a celebrity, she's this, but at first glance, I look like the rest of them, so I could get shot, so I'm afraid to drive my car. So initially, you kind of feel like she has this, you know, tremendous emotional outburst and compassion for the black race and the condition of black people in America in this, you know, right now, for black men who are being shot, for Sandra Bland, who was, you know, murdered in prison, all these things, you feel like, okay, she's making a case for the black race, for the black community, for black people, and then she just completely goes left and says, but if they don't, because I'm afraid for
right.
my life.
Now take this in because it's me.
Don't know. If they don't know who I am, not that all the rest of those folks won't get shot. If they don't know who I am, that I'm not really one of them, then I could get shot. And I'm afraid of that. And until you white people who are more like me understand what
right.
the black people are and that they can't identify me from them because I'm really one of you, until you're going through this too, you will never understand what we're going through. So y'all need to
right.
rally around and make
right.
sure that they know who I am so that they won't shoot me because I'm one of y'all. I'm like, oh, my God.
And the reason I really understand your point is because I remember Cheryl Underwood making a comment a long time ago by saying, like, she was different than other black folks. She was like, well, I don't find that offensive. Like, I don't know why other black people do. I don't. Like, she was special, and now she just interjected herself in with everybody else. Because now white folks, she's afraid that white folks ain't recognizing who she is. That's kind of how it came off. I don't know. Low key, I don't know how you took it, but that's how I took it.
Stir it up.
Now we do.
Listen, what I heard was an upset, horrified, scared black woman. That's what I heard. I don't
okay.
think she was trying to say anything other than basically making a point of, you know, if they recognize her, they might not kill her. You know. And that white people, you don't know the fear of driving your car and being killed just for driving a nice car or driving in the wrong area. Or they don't know that feeling. They don't know that fear. And so that's what I got from it. I mean, I know Shirley said some wild things in her day, but listening to that clip for me just that quick, that's what I got out of it. I think she's attempting to make a statement and – she's upset. You know, when you're emotional and you say things, one thing might be said in your mind, in your brain, and another thing comes out your mouth. You know,
right.
you, of course you can't take it back, but that wasn't the intention of what you were trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I have to tell you, the biggest impression, the biggest impact for me was Aisha Tyler's statement. Huh. I think she was more cohesive than anything, you know. Like, even as she said, you know, remember the guy who was laying on the ground with his hands up, and the policeman shot him and said, he said, why'd you shoot me? He said, I don't know. I think that had more impact. But, again, it is not our job as black folks to convince white folks not to shoot us. It ain't our job. There's something sick in you. That's not for us to debate. It ain't for us to have no come-to-Jesus moment. It ain't jack for us. There's no work here. That work needs to be done in their community. They need to talk. They need to deal with that. Else, the only thing that I can say about that is don't try to put that genie back in the bottle and tell people, hey, you know what? You need to not kneel because I'm offended. Why you always talk about black and white stuff? You cannot have that conversation with me, and you won't even deal with your people on your ignorance. So don't talk to me about black folks being ignorant about Jack. How come y'all killing each other? I'm like, hey. You know what I mean? Like, they love to change the subject. So we have a conversation that need to be had, or they need to have a conversation amongst themselves about why they can't see the difference. Unless that is just an agenda issue. But I think Aisha's point was a little bit more on point. And I understand from Cheryl's point, yep, I'm kind of kidding with her about the fact that when she was emotional, she just started spewing words. And so she could have been not speaking clearly,
which is okay. But Cheryl Underwood, kind of in the past, you know, I'm not that forgiving like Low-Key is. So Low-Key is so much nicer than me, I have to say, for the record. But that's why we're friends. I'm like, you might have to run that past Low-Key first, but you come to me. But
I have my days.
Although she has been on the wrong side of a lot of stuff that had to do with black folks, she and Steve Harvey, every now and then when they come back, we always open our arms up to them because that's just how we are. We're forgiving folks. I am just not that doggone forgiving. So, Cheryl Underwood, I'm going to defer to Kathleen on that one. I'm going to defer my thought to Kathleen. I'm not forgiving her for that mistake.
I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it. like I said, the comments that I was with her, and even today I was like, okay, you know what? Let me listen more objectively because I don't want to be out here criticizing this woman for, you know, her emotional expression of the gun violence against black people by police. So let me, you know, she's speaking, so let's hear it. And then she does that because it's kind of like, you know, when they say drunk men don't tell no lie. When you get all upset like that and riled up and you start really letting it fly without the filter, a lot of times that's really where you're at. And I just didn't get the feeling that her compassion in that moment was really all that built up energy and fear and the crying and all that stuff. That really wasn't for the guy that was laying on the ground with his hands up. That was because she was scared that they might not know
exactly
who she is.
Exactly. She was scared. And just like, see, Low-Key, here's where you're getting overruled. This is a court thing. When Kathleen see people on the stand and they start lying, and they're like, okay, I did it. That's what she did. She got rattled because she was upset.
That was it. She just let it go. I was just going to say, for me, right? I could see my, there are many times that I watch these things on, I watch this stuff on television. This man, Keith, when he was, when he was shot in North Carolina and they started showing the videotapes and I heard about it and everything, I sat here and I just wept. I'm just so heartbroken about this. I am really, really heartbroken about it. And it's like, oh, my God, not again. And if you allow yourself to just sit and think about it and you say, oh, my God, my son, my brothers, my this, my that, yes, we're concerned for black women as well, but pretty much the majority of what we're seeing with people gunned down in the street, they're black men. And so even as a mother, I'm identifying with the mothers of the movement. My thought is like, you know, God, thank you that you have protected my family, my closest friends, but we need to do something about what's happening to our black men in this community. And, you know, yes, there is, don't get me wrong, when I'm driving down the street and a cop car pulls up behind me and they're just driving how they drive behind you, waiting for you to sneeze the wrong way so they can pull you over, please don't think that I'm not getting out my Depends in that moment. I am. I am just about my safety with, you know, around the police as the next black person. But if you're going to hear my outcry, and I'm not trying to compare myself to her, but I'm just saying the outcry is going to be for the people that it has happened to, and predominantly we're looking at black men, predominantly.
Right.
So when she's like, and so if I was to say, okay, well, I don't want to cut my hair short because if they look in the car, they might think I'm a man, you know, and I might get shot. You know what I mean? It's just,
it's like getting some you need to get some cream to lighten up. They keep thinking I'm a dark black man. It's like, if I was light skin, they wouldn't.
They don't recognize me. You know, I'm like,
oh, that's funny. See, all right, Loki.
I'm still going to say that I think that was just a scared woman. She was scared. She's scared.
Yes.
She's upset. And
yes,
I don't think it was just. I don't think it was just about her. She said, "Until white people, until y'all feel that, y'all don't feel that. Until you feel that." You know, she's saying to him, I mean, I'm stopped in the parking lot at work, and one of the camp staff members, he's, you know, I'll say Cambodian, and he's talking to a white gentleman, you know, and so we start conversating, and Black Lives Matter comes up, and the white guy goes, and they need to just do something with that, because I'm going to start a petition for All Lives Matters. Okay, the switch goes off, and I begin to preach to him instead of beating him up, because I need him to understand. I said, listen, that's the problem in America. I said, the problem in America is racism. You know, it ain't about us saying Black Lives Matter. It's about racism. And I said, we're saying to you that Black Lives Matter. Stop killing us. We're not saying white lives don't matter, Asian lives don't matter, blue lives don't matter. What we're saying, the focus is Black lives matter. So stop
in
killing
addition
us.
To
you,
everybody
you just,
else.
I said, you just made a comment about, you went straight to blue lives matter or all lives matter. I said, are they being killed? You being killed? Blue lives matters, but they're being killed like that? Is someone targeting them every week, every month? No, I said, so let's stop talking about that. I said, you guys, in a minute we focus on something, you have to discredit it. I said, that's the problem in this country. I said, you just sat right here and made a comment in front of me. You don't know me like that, but you made that comment. I said, that's the privilege. That's the privilege you believe you have. I said, the next thing that comes out of his mouth is, well, somebody's profiting from it. I think someone's profiting from this whole thing with Black Lives Matter. I said, really? I said, you know, you might want to get in your car.
Yeah, we create stuff. We create, like, not-for-profits around that just to make money. Like, who's paying them? That should be your next question. So that's the thing. Always to think that something has a dollar value for us. So now you think that whole complaining or the whole movement has to do with somebody hustling somebody for money? But we don't really care about the police shooting black people. We just want to make some money off of the T-shirts.
Right. It's an opportunity. Got to capitalize.
Oh, no.
But that's why I say I think Cheryl was just, you know, she gets emotional sometimes. And I'm not trying to say that I love Cheryl because I got my own issues with her. But I just feel like she was voicing and it got emotional for her.
Yeah,
and
I agree. I think to put herself out there
and say, you know, if they don't recognize me, they might kill me. I don't see the problem with that. I don't see the problem with that. I think this is a woman who, like I said, you might think you're saying it one way and it's coming out another. You know, I don't think she meant to put herself as the focus of anything. And no, she didn't say a lot about the person, but I think she is just caught up in that moment, you know, and she felt like they glossed something over. And so she tried to make a point, but when you're trying to make a point, you get emotional, you get lost.
Yeah.
Just my opinion.
No, I agree with you. I think like Kathleen said though, she got emotional, she started telling the truth. And so that fear is real, and that fear is real in everyone. But at the same time, it became a little bit more personal, and it kind of hit home to her. Like, you can't look at black folks, especially when stuff happens, as being separate from yourself. And then when that reality sits in, then that gets emotional. But, again, we've seen times where she it doesn't sink in for her because she believed, oh, that's just them. And this time it hit home. So it became really emotional to her. And again, I said, Tyler was, her words were pretty much on point. And she's done that in the past too. I like her, but I know that she sometimes creates distance between that because she's identifying too closely with the people who is not relating, right? Aisha don't think, I'm not sure that she doesn't know that she's bilingual. She probably does know that, but at the same time, she's pacifying. No, I mean, I like her. I mean, just generally. But sometimes when you're bilingual like that, you seem to think that since you are fluent going back and forth, that you don't realize that there are some people who can't. So you can't look at the people who can't go back and forth or who don't go back and forth as y'all need to be like me or y'all need to see it this way. So that's the only thing about, you know, watching any of these talk shows. For me, I don't really like any of them. Even something like The View, Whoopi, 90% of the time I like Whoopi. And there are some times that she has this We Are the World thing going, and I just go, okay, right? Because it's her job, it's what she do, you know. But I like Whoopi. They can always come home. We're always good with them. But, you know, while I'm thinking about this, we don't get second chances on major mainstream media. So I can't fault any of them for not taking a stand one way or another. Like, unlike lying-ass Brian Williams, sorry for cursing, but lying Brian, who has an 11 o'clock show on MSNBC after he was caught lying on NBC, they're fading him back into the consciousness of people, making him a serious journalist again. Him and the woman, Nicole Wallace, who was kicked off The View, they're all on MSNBC. So it's a minor version of Fox on a supposedly kind of liberalist media, and they're not liberal at all. But that whole news show is like conservative white media. That's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to witness that, and they mask it as, oh, we're objective and we're not like Fox, and they're actually just like Fox.
All right.
Yeah. So let me do this. I didn't give you a chance, Loki. I didn't ask you if you had something today that you wanted to talk about. We just kind of went into all of those things and kept it moving. Anything in particular in the world that you want to stir it up with today?
No, I think, you know, y'all had the key points for me. The vote, the stop and frisk, you know, hard topic right there. And, I can say a whole lot, but this week I'm good.
This week you good? Oh, I think Kathleen, look, he's going to do the whole show next week. He's like, this week I'm good. Next week, it may not be it. All right, Kathleen.
Week, I'm bringing the steel toe boots.
I hear you. Kathy, you're up. How about, is there something that we missed that you wanted to bring up today?
Didn't we just have the Emmy? And didn't OJ? Did we talk about that?
No, we didn't talk about the Emmys and.
The OJ show, well, so, you know, what ended up with quite a few awards for Courtney B. Vance. And so, you know, I just want to send a shout out to him for his success and the, you know, of course, his performance. I haven't seen all of it, the entire series yet, but they did quite well with that.
You know, okay, so I won't rain on this. On this parade, but it would be the Lion OJ story that actually won all the Emmys. If it was a documentary part, right? Because they get to rewrite history and then win awards on the written version of it to leave you with an impression so that you can go, oh, that's the Emmy Award winning version of it? Let's see what that said. But just like, you know, I've said in the past, And coincidentally, I was actually at my cell phone provider. I was paying my bill the other day. And while I was in there, I was talking to one of the technicians, and he was saying, well, you know, on the cell towers, there's a code that you can punch in, and you can listen to a conversation about from anybody who's using that particular cell tower. So he said, yeah, it used to be easy to do, but you can only hear one way of the conversation if the other person's on the landline. But if they're on both have cell phones, you can hear both ways, but you have to keep punching in different codes. And I said to him, you know, what this reminds me of? It reminds me of the O.J. case, right? Everybody says O.J. did it, he was there, blah, 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 blah. But when they went to the cell phone company and said, pull up O.J.'s cell phone and let's see exactly where he was, the prosecution said, oh, the cell phone company said they lost the data from that day and they lost the backup. Like only one day. The cell phone company can't find any of where the cell tone. I was like, I wish they would have put that in the O.J. show. I'd have gave them an Emmy for that because nobody knows that that happened. And I think they were on that for like 2 days, Kathleen, if I can recall. Johnny Cochran telling Judge Ito, make them get that information. And Marcia Clark saying, we've tried. They said they can't find it. They don't have no backup. I mean, he went in on them, make them give that to us. And Judge Ito was like, there's nothing we could do. And they wouldn't subpoena the cell phone company to help them with that lie that the prosecution was telling. They said they know exactly where he was, and they can triangulate it. And so even in 1995, by the way, they were able to triangulate your signal to figure out where you were within a block, so they still could figure it out back then. But anyway, that's what I think about that O.J. show getting Emmys. It's that you can get an Emmy from lies, that from the dramatization. I am really not with you.
Well,
all right, look.
Well, I guess I have nothing
go ahead,
else. Kathleen.
You say that again?
I guess I have nothing else.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to rain on that parade. I guess we know what this means. We'll see you again next week. I think we're going to the outro on this one.
I think next week, man.
That's what?
Jerome shut that down, so maybe next year.
Wait a minute. I shut what down? When did I shut down?
Mr. Vance, I tried to give you a shout out, but Jerome shut that down, so maybe next year.
No. I'm not even mad at Cuba Gooden's. I'm happy to be here. Woo! Happy to have my Emmy Oscar thingy. I'm not jumping on them. All I'm saying is that the show was garbage, although he gave a great performance in a bunch of garbage. And there we go. That's where we started the news beginning.
That's how it's done.
That's how we do. That's how we stir it up on the way out. All right. We'll see you guys again next week. Go stir it up.
Hands in order, in case they put tax on air and drinking water. Round us up for slaughter, stick us in order. From lightest to darkest, from short to taller. Then it will not matter if you a baller or if you broke his hell and ain't got a quarter. Will not make a difference once you on that list. Remember Tuskegee, remember syphilis. Nowadays it's